It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. Hi there, Daniel.
Hello, Mark.
Good to see you once again.
Good
hey,
to
this
be
week.
Here.
Looking back at a subject you've dealt with before several times, but kind of a refresher course on communication in marriage in particular. I guess these things would apply to every kind of communication.
Every kind of communication. Of course, can be just exchanging data. And we've talked on the show before about how when we're talking about, in particular, intimate relationships, marriage specifically, it's more than just exchange of data. It's communion. And it was interesting, your leading comment. We've talked about this before. I hear that a lot from clients. We've talked about this before.
Because you bring it up constantly.
Yeah, because
it's marital counseling sessions.
And, you know, I can go over these tools with people, and everybody agrees, and then we'll meet again on the next session or a couple sessions later, and it's as though those things were totally forgotten and we're not using them anymore. People need to understand that when we go over these communication tools, when I do this with clients, or if you're listening on the air and you think that, oh, these are good ideas, you really have got to put them into practice. Mm-hmm. They're fundamental to the relationship. They're not just good ideas or good exercises. These are a fundamental to the relationship. So, yeah, it's a thing that comes up quite often in marriage counseling. And of course, married couples have things that they have to resolve. And this is the thing about marriage is it's a dynamic between husband and wife that's never really at rest. It's that you never get through surrendering, you never get through submitting, you never get through caring, you never get through carrying the other person's burden too. This is a process that's meant to go on through our lives, refining us, so that we, as a refined marriage, can bring gifts to the body of Christ when we attend services or when we meet people. Scripture says that the body is edified by that which every joint supplies. And a joint, of course, is a relationship that's two parts coming together. So marriages have to be in tune, and they have to be continually working on these things. So we come up with some communication tools. And so I teach these communication tools to probably every couple that comes to see me, because it is fundamental. And yet there seems to be a resistance in marriage relationships. And I suppose this is largely because to properly communicate, you have to be somewhat vulnerable in order to commune. You have to be vulnerable. And it's just something that goes against the grain for us. So there's this underlying resistance to communication. People argue, and they may consider that a kind of communication where they're putting up their defense mechanisms,
right,
and nobody's going to yield or bend. But that isn't, that's not what we're, that's not our objective. That's not what we're trying to do. So, and the problem turns out to be me. And I'm going to close with these statements too. The problem turns out to be me. It's not the other person. It's not my wife. If it's the wife, it's not the husband. Each person has to come to grips with that. The problem is me. It's Christ trying to change me, not the other person. Of course, then you run into, well, yeah, I know God's trying to change me, but if I change first, the other person will have no reason to change.
Right.
And so we come to a standstill.
Right. If I give too much.
Somebody's got to say, I'm going to be the servant. And then find ways to communicate to the other person, listen, I've been wrong. The problem has been largely me, and I'm going to be working on these things, and I need encouragement from you. Will you encourage me? And then the other person says, yes, I'll encourage you to change. I always thought you should. But then they might go away and say, maybe I need to change too.
Mm.
So ideally, both people get on board at the same time, but sometimes somebody's got to be the first one. Now, of course, these this is not one size fits all. There are relationships that are very where there's physical abuse and violence, and one party is definitely crossing the line, maybe in numerous ways. Maybe there's an alcohol problem. Maybe there's another kind of addiction, and those things certainly have to be addressed in particular ways. But on a level playing field, these things are fundamental. So I usually go at this way. I'll talk to people and say, there are five, and then I correct myself and I say, no, six fundamental communication tools. And the first one is self-analysis. Mm. And self-analysis will probably eliminate quite a bit of the the verbiage, because I know that when I began to analyze my communication before I communicated to my wife, I found that many things didn't need to be said.
Hmm.
So what is self-analysis? Well, I'm asking myself these kinds of questions. Okay, I'm a little bit upset with this other person, irritated, and so I'm going to address this. But in self-analysis, I go, okay, what is my real motive? And what's the real problem? And I start with myself. Is the problem me? How much of the problem is me? Do I really have to say what I'm going to say? What do I expect the reaction to be? What is the objective? Am I just trying to hurt the other person? I want them to feel my pain? And also, how much of this is horizontal, this issue that I have? Can this really be solved by addressing this with a husband or wife? Can it really be resolved that way? Or is this an issue that needs to be resolved vertically? Do I need to talk to the Lord about this? Maybe I should talk to the Lord about it before I bring the topic up. This kind of self-analysis is critical, I think, to good communication. You can probably see that it's a step toward vulnerability. If I stop myself to be honest with myself and be honest with God, it's a step toward vulnerability. So I'm starting to get there. Self-analysis, then the second tool would be timing.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be, is this a proper time to bring this up? You know, it's a story that I tell about my wife when she was working long hours at work and I was going to school. So I had a kind of a flexible schedule and I was taking care of our daughter from zero to probably 5 years old. Most of the time was this kind of the dad. I was in school, but I had flexibility. So I can still visualize my wife coming through the door in the evening with pouring down rain and she's got a bag of groceries in one arm and her briefcase in the other hand, and I stop her and say, let me tell you what happened.
Oh.
You know, it's this thing of timing. Mm-hmm. Is this the proper time? Is it likely to go well right now when the other person is trying to juggle several issues right now? Is this the time for me to address something that I think should be corrected?
Mm-hmm.
Timing.
Mm-hmm.
The next one would be on my list would be the words that I'm going to speak. And a lot of times if we've got too much emotion and not enough rationale, and you know those are spatial counterparts, the more emotional I am. Let me repeat this. The more emotional I am about an issue, the less logical I am.
Hmm.
So if you're emotional and pumped up about something, you're probably like about 75% in the wrong. So you need to back off on the emotion so that you can think logically. But a lot of times when I'm emotional about it, I'm going to say things that are accusatory, rhetorical questions that are shaming and devaluing, and I want to get all of that out. The words I speak need to be respectful, caring, deliberate, essential, efficient. You know, planning out the words that I am going to use. And you can see all along here, if I take this kind of time setting up the conversation, it's going to go have a chance to go better. After the words, and I've kind of considered the words that I'm going to use now, I want to consider my tone of voice. You know, maybe you've seen this where if you, maybe your wife have done this dance, a lot of married couples do. Stop shouting. And it's, you know, and I've kind of put together that if it's a conversation the other person doesn't want to hear, it's shouting. But if it's If it's right. about something, then it's not shouting. And right. so some people just have a certain tone of voice that, and if it's an uncomfortable conversation.
Condescending or sarcastic tone.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we need to kind of monitor that too. Is, am I speaking in a, maybe it's volume, maybe it's, maybe it has a kind of a maybe it's an acidic kind of a tone, but I need to, does my tone match the words? And is my tone such that, the other person, the hearer is going to receive the message. It's going to come as calm and, deliberate and thought through. So the tone of voice has a lot to do with that too. And then, I guess we're on, number four. Would be the body language.
Body language.
And that's very important. Mm. And sometimes as an illustration, I'll share a situation where parent talking to children a lot of times. So my daughter is, when she was younger, quite a bit shorter than myself. So when I was talking to her, she would kind of go mute. And it would be a monologue instead of a dialogue. And I realized after a period of time that she was intimidated by my size and my voice. So I began to sit down, narrow my shoulders, again, tone of voice, but the body posture needs to say to the other person, I'm not attacking you. Your voice is as important as my voice. So you have to have your body posture in such a way. And, you know, men are typically, taller, heavier, broader. But, you know, women can have a body language that's very intimidating when they're talking too. Mm-hmm. So this isn't just for guys, it's for gals too.
Well, women so often are more in touch with their words.
Well, that's true. Uh-huh. And that's true. And it has something to do with the hemispheres in the brain with women. It's not quite as pronounced because they don't have the testosterone at the levels men do. It's not, and so it's more fluid. Yeah, they can have the emotional experience and the words. Sometimes women need to be a little patient with husbands that don't seem to, you know, quote unquote, talk about their feelings and recognize that there really is a hemispheric boundary there. Men can talk about their feelings, but they actually have to learn to do that. They actually have to wire the hemispheres together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was body posture. And then finally, facial expression. And I didn't jot them down here, but I found a link where there were all these, I think it's 10 or so benefits.
Like a chart or something?
Yeah, of benefits.
Memes?
Benefits of the, well, that too. But I was talking about the benefits of smiling. Boy, immune system, length of life. There were like 10 of them. I wish I had jotted them down, but you can Google them.
You could probably
10 benefits of smiling.
Oh, okay.
And it'll have to do, yeah, with your immune system and general health and brain function and lots of just good things. I've noticed that if I smile, it's almost it's very difficult to have a bad impression of a person if I'm smiling. And so smiling. So those are the tools. I'm going to talk a little bit more about them when we come back, and why we don't use them as much as we should.
Okay, talking with Daniel Pryor again, Sound Mind this week, looking at communication. So important in marriage, communication tools, kind of a refresher course. We'll continue in a moment. People are intrigued. They need some help maybe with their marriage, their marital communication. How do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yes, the phone number is 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. I'm doing a lot of Skype counseling, but also face-to-face counseling, offices in Kirkland and Edmonds.
Okay, back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast with Daniel Pryor in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Where marriage is concerned, an ounce of prevention is worth a lot more than a pound of cure. Too many couples start off with misconceptions and then wait until the damage is done to seek counsel. As a marriage counselor, I help couples understand both the purpose and process of marriage, and I teach essential tools of communion. If you're married or thinking about marriage and want to get started right, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169. Hello, this is Daniel Pryor, host of the Sound Mind broadcast show here on KCIS. Right now I'm doing a lot of Skype counseling, and this is a great way to get counseling in this time. So if that interests you, give me a call at 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. 6169, or contact me through my website, BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Daniel this week reminding us about some communication tools and some various ideas about communication. Some of those tools were self-analysis, timing, emotional tone, body language, and you left off with facial expressions, and you were referencing some kind of a facial expression chart that you'd seen, and you found it.
Yeah, I looked this up. So that's good. I wanted people to have these. So I'm just going down this list here. Ten of the benefits of smiling. And some people have more difficulty with smiling than others. So I don't know if it's habitual or what, but I tend to, we got a photograph, an old family photograph of my parents and all of the siblings, and it looks like one of those, 1800 photographs.
Right. Everybody, nobody smiled.
Nobody smiled.
Right.
And it was just, just a difficult thing. And so I've had to work on smiling. In fact, I was, probably shared this before, but I was driving my little MG that I had put together, and I was driving. It was a sunny day, and I think I had sunlight in my eyes a little bit, but it impressed me. Somebody in a car next to me rolled down their window and said, you have a nice car, stop that frowning. And it was about that time, too, when I was, I was just walking through the home. My daughter and wife were there, and I overheard my daughter say to my wife, what's the matter with Dad? And my wife said, oh, I think he's just having a bad day. But I wasn't, but those two events happened close enough together that I realized I should do something about smiling more. Of course, we carry a lot of, kind of like low-level anxieties. A lot of times we don't even know it's there, and it affects our face and our facial expression. So sometimes maybe we've got a scowl on our face and we don't even realize it. But
well, for me, it was squinting, like in the sun, like you say, driving in the sun. You know, you're kind of squinting, and it makes you look like you're always grimacing, and you're not really feeling bad.
And sometimes I think for me it's just a conscious effort to just smile. But here are some reasons reason number one: smiling helps you live longer. And so they've done studies where they've associated people who smile more have lengthened their life on Earth. And maybe some of us don't want to lengthen our life on Earth right now, but if we want to, smiling, get in the habit of smiling. Smiling decreases stress. I can get into some of the reasons here as I scroll down, because there's something about the release of dopamine and serotonin that makes a lot of these things make a lot of sense, because the when we smile, it affects those glands that release serotonin and dopamine. So it can help us. It can relieve stress if you smile. Try it. Smiling elevates your mood. It's kind of the same thing. And this, they mentioned the neurotransmitters of dopamine and serotonin that boost your mood. They act like antidepressants, because a lot of antidepressants are either boost your dopamine, or they boost your serotonin, or their serotonin reuptake inhibitors, like a lot of the antidepressant medications are SSRI, serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs. So smiling is contagious. Maybe you've figured this out, that if you smile, other people smile back to you. If you scowl, maybe you'll get that kind of response.
Well, didn't the Bible even say a merry heart is good medicine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, amazing. The Bible has it right in the pages of the Bible.
There you
go. People reflect back to you what you send them. I often say your impression of yourself is your experience of yourself is your experience of other people experiencing you. So people reflect back to you what you're giving them. So if you smile, they smile back to you. And what does that do for you when someone smiles at you? It gives you a sense of being, I guess I'm not such a bad person. But a lot of times you have to be the first one to smile. So smiling is contagious. Smiling boosts your immune system. Some of these seem a little bit redundant as we're going down, but because relieving stress, elevating mood, and boosting your immune system and longevity of life all seem to be pretty tied together. So again, that would have the immune system, that would have to do again with neurotransmitters, the release of neurotransmitters. Smiling can lower your blood pressure, believe it or not. Smiling can reduce pain because serotonin and dopamine have to do with pain relief. And so since smiling affects the secretion of these neurotransmitters, it actually can reduce pain. Smiling is attractive. Smiling makes you attractive. And they have smiling suggests success. I don't know if that's particularly important, but if you're looking for a job,
there you go.
You want to smile during the interview.
Yeah.
Smiling helps you stay positive. Sure, it does. Again, neurotransmitters. And if you've experienced this and you've been one of those people who have heard this and you've put it into exercise and you have disciplined yourself to smile more, you see that all those things are actually true. So we're talking about the communication tools, and again, they were self-analysis, the words I use, the tone of voice, my body posture, timing first, and then timing, and then words, and then tone of voice, and then body language, and then finally facial expression, which, you know, we tend to think less of facial expression than we do the rest of those. But hey, we just read off 10 reasons to smile.
There you go.
So you think about these things, and why would you not do this? But as I was saying at the beginning of the broadcast here, that there seems to be this resistance to it. Well, I don't think we don't like the vulnerability. We don't like to give away power. And I think that seems like part of it, doesn't it? Where I don't want to put my cards out until you put your cards out, you know, and I don't want to yield any position or any power. This would be where self-analysis would come in, and facing this kind of that kind of resistance to communication. Some couples we've talked about before, we get to the place where we can actually create a spouse that we don't like or create a spouse that we don't love. We've built up a story about the other person, and we've focused on the things that they do wrong. And all of this comes, why do I focus on the things that other people do wrong? All this comes to a sense of lack of self-satisfaction or any purpose in my own life. And so I tend to point toward other people's errors.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get on that track, and I know that there's a lot of married people that are listening that know exactly what I'm talking about. Once you get on that path of not liking the other person, it's a default. And given opportunities to turn that around, you even resist the opportunities to turn that around.
Mm.
I've talked to people about a moment that I had earlier in our marriage many years ago. We're going 41 years this year, I think, of marriage. So we're looking back at when we were married 10 years, something like that, looking back quite a ways. And there's my wife putting her makeup on. And I had this moment where I was looking at her in the mirror, put her makeup on, and I realized that, boy, the way she's contorting her face, I could right now decide that I did not like her. And it was just such a powerful moment because I realized that I had a choice right then that would change the course of our marriage.
Really?
You know, that I would go down
just
this,
the way she's putting her makeup on?
Well, my
you were
going to
make a crack about it? Or
no, it was the way I was looking at it.
Oh,
and saying, I could, just the person in my wife involved in that. I said, I could at this moment decide never to find her attractive again, or I could take another path. But the powerful moment was that I had a choice to do that. And so my point is, once people start down that path of not liking, it is difficult to get back. And I work with a number of couples just trying to teach them what you need to do to start liking again. But you can make a decision. But I think it comes down to this in communication, these fundamental things underlying the resistance. We have to, when we come to communicate and talk about difficult things and get over difficult issues, we have to start with, the problem is me. The problem is not the other person. What is God trying to say to me? That's what's primarily going on here. Mm-hmm. It isn't God speaking to me about the other person's faults. Mm-hmm. That's me. God is speaking to me about the changes I need to make. And so that sounds like, I mentioned that to the beginning. I've mentioned it now, so it doesn't seem like it's rushed. But when I'm talking to people in communication, that's what I'm going to be talking about, trying to get them to see that you're going to have to be vulnerable before God and ultimately before your spouse. And you're going to have to be honest with yourself and realize that I have so many things to fix before I start working on the other person. I'm going to be busy my whole life just letting God change me. So listen to this. Listen to the podcast. Take these things seriously. They're not just Band-Aids. They're absolutely
fundamental. You have several shows on this subject, too.
I do, and papers. I'd encourage people to go to—
Where do they get those?
Yeah, ChristianCounselorsForum.com. ChristianCounselorsForum.com. And in the archives at the bottom of the page, you'll see a two-part article on communication. So I'd encourage you to hear that article on communication.
Okay. How do people get in touch with you if they need help with their marriage or anything else?
Right. The phone number is 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. People also email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. We've mentioned ChristianCounselorsForum.com. I'm doing Skype counseling, in-office counseling, Kirkland and Edmonds.
Okay, always great stuff. Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.